ideology.
Tenure.
Coffee.
Light bulb.
Critique.
Methods.
Dysentery.
Lavish.
Corduroy.
Research.
You are listening to.
You're listening to.
Prof Tuck.
On CITR.
Thank you very much.
Good Monday morning. Hello and welcome to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Today on the show, you'll be hearing an interview I conducted with Dr. Daniel Pauly from UBC's Fisheries Centre a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Pauly has been studying the delicate balance of our marine ecosystems for over three decades, and he is an expert in his field. After many years at the International Center for Living Aquatic Resources Management in the Philippines, in 1994, Dr. Pauly became a professor at the Fisheries Center here at UBC. He was the director of the center for 5 years and also the principal investigator of the Sea Around Us project. More on that in a minute. But first, I'd like to remind you all and all of our listeners that the annual fund drive here at CITR is going on over the next 2 weeks. CITR relies heavily upon support from listeners and donors like you. Your contributions will ensure that UBC's campus station remains an independent community radio station in the years ahead. I'll be giving out the pledge line phone number throughout the show. Please do call in and show your support for our station, 101.9 FM in Vancouver. That number is 604 UBC Unit. Okay, so back to Prof Talk business. In the interview you're about to hear, you'll learn about the current state of our marine ecosystems. Some experts are calling our quickly declining ocean environments the aquacalypse. But without further ado, let's listen to the interview. Here is Dr. Daniel Pauly. So Dr. Pauly, thank you for joining us again on season 2 of Prof Talk. Welcome back.
My pleasure.
So you're back from sabbatical. Can you tell us what you were doing and where you were?
I was in France 3 months, in January, February, and March, in the city of Sète. That's on the Mediterranean coast, and it should have been warm, but actually there's a cold wind, really cold, that blows from the Alps. It's called as the Mistral, and even though I'm French, I experienced it for the first time, and it was bitterly cold.
Oh.
And these 3 months I spent at a lab of where a friend of mine is a director, a government lab, and I wrote a book. It's called Five Easy Pieces, and it assesses five papers that I had in Nature and Science. These are magazines. All journals, rather, and these five papers dealt with global fisheries and had a big impact on the media. And I showed the different position that people have taken once the paper were out, and why. And this is a reception study, so to say. Besides being an evaluation of the state of the fisheries in the globe. So these first 3 months were at first quiet. I could write the book, I could finish it. And in the last month, I was featured in the newspaper Le Monde. And this caused lots of people to approach me and incessant requests for interviews. And when I left, this was the only way to reestablish some sort of peace. And I went to Hawaii for the lecture series, and then I went 3 months in Germany, in the city of Bremerhaven, that is close to Bremen, and at an institute where lots of the people I studied with when I was a student, in the meantime, have become old professors like me. And I started a second book, which is based on earlier items that I wrote and expands on them, which is called Gasping Fish and Panting Squids, about the role of oxygen in limiting the growth of and distribution of water breathing animals in the sea. And this is relevant to global warming, because as this fish get exposed to warmer temperatures, they need more oxygen, but there's less oxygen in the water. So that is a double whammy that they experience now. And I had written about this before, but I'm starting again now because of the relevance that this issue has.
Now, you are a marine ecologist. Can you tell us the difference between a fisheries biologist and a marine ecologist?
Well, actually, I don't know what I am because I did start as a fishery scientist. I am quite one of the few fishery scientists who was trained as such. The profession is geared toward assisting the industry, the fishing industry, through the government in maintaining its own catches. But over the years, I was working in developing countries. I noted that fishery scientists have very little impact on fisheries policy, and I decided to move over to the, so to say, to the ecological side, but because the various NGOs that work on the conservation of natural resources it seemed to me more effective in shaping policy and in restraining the fishing industry.
Now, in a recent article you wrote for New Republic magazine, which I read, you said that our oceans have been the victims of a giant Ponzi scheme. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Well, a Ponzi scheme, it is well known, is a sort of investment in which the return that you get from investing are not drawn from the income, from an interest that the investment would generate. In other words, no values are generated, but are drawn from the investment of later investors. So this is a fraudulent scheme which always comes to a bitter end when there are no more investors to provide the revenue for the earlier investors. And the biggest scheme of such of the sort is the one by this man Madoff, who was put in jail recently. Now, fisheries operate in a similar way, in a sense that the experience has been that what has been caught and landed and marketed is not the surplus that can be harvested safely from fisheries, but the population itself that has been fished down, and then fisheries has moved on to the next population. It would be similar to forestry, where you don't harvest in a rotational scheme the what can be harvested, but you liquidate the forest. And in a sense, any harvesting technique that is any harvesting strategy that extract more than the interest of that is generated is a Ponzi scheme, because at the end people will be stuck with no more resource. And the analogy had never been seen that I know of, and so this paper characterizes.
You've also said that eating a tuna roll at a sushi restaurant should be considered no more environmentally benign than driving a Hummer or harpooning a manatee. Now, surely that's a controversial remark, and can you expand on that idea?
Well, I will take the coward's excuse and mention that a few things have been invented for me by the editors of the New Republic.
Okay.
One of them was the title, and the other one was the thing with the manatee. Because I would never think of harpooning a manatee, though that is being done. But I sympathize with the thought, and I did not object to it. And basically, we have a situation where the Atlantic bluefin tuna is in great, great danger. It is severely overfished, and the quota that is allocated to the fishery is far too high. It is higher than science has determined would allow the maintenance of the stock, let alone the rebuilding of the stock. It, besides the quota, is regularly over, or we call quota busting, that what the fishery does. So it is much higher, and if you eat tuna, you contribute a little bit to that. However, this point about the individual consumer being responsible is a point that I don't want to overemphasize, that I would not have overemphasized so much, because actually what changes things is policy. It's not decision at the consumer level. Very often people ask me when I do a lecture, what should I do? And they expect the answer will be, you should eat this and not that. But actually, what you can do is get involved politically, get involved as a citizen. And there is a good chance that effort done this way will be, on long term, be successful. Whereas an involvement only as consumer is, at the end of the day, probably ineffective.
Welcome back to Prof Talk. You're listening to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM and an interview with Dr. Polly. We'll be right back.
I heard Grandpa on my transistor radio, though he turned in his bones 20 years ago.
CITR is seeking to fill the airways with the names, voices, and ideas of you, our listeners,
who will help us raise $24,000 during this fund drive.
We want you to take ownership of your station. After the fund drive, we'll record donors' voices for a special donor recognition day.
Donors' names will be read out each hour, and donors of $101.9 or more will have a chance to air a personalized message, a rant, a birthday wish, a poem to a girlfriend, or a shout-out to a favorite band.
This is a small way for us to thank you for your support of quality, independent radio.
And I finally realized what he wanted to show me. Where I've been, where I am, is the show.
Own your frequency.
This is your station.
Support CITR now. Call 604-822-8648. 604-UBC-UNIT.
Or donate online at citr.ca/donate.
Welcome back to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today on the show, we're listening to an interview with Dr. Daniel Polly.
Can we talk about jellyfish for a minute? Can you tell us what is going on with this explosion of jellyfish populations in our oceans? It's something that I don't know a lot about, and I don't think that the wider public seems to know a lot about this.
About 10 years ago, I came up with a notion that it was written up in a paper in Science that I demonstrated that we are fishing down the food web. In other words, the fish that are landed are more and more small and lower in the food web, in the food chain. In other words, there are less fish that are big predators. We eat the others, the fish that where they prey. That is the trend worldwide. And as a quip, I suggested that therefore we would eat jellyfish at the end of the day because there would be no fish. And at the time, this was only a quip. And the quip got picked up by the press a lot. And it turned out that this is happening, really. China, in China, and in various countries in the far in East Asia, people eat jellyfish, and this is not as revolting as it sounds. When once the water is extracted from jellyfish, they have a consistency like cucumbers, and you can, if you cut it, if you slice it, if you dice it, you can make dishes that are very reasonable. And I have eaten that in Taiwan, in China, also in Japan.
And it tastes okay?
It can have various tastes. It depends what it is fed, what it is combined with.
Right.
but for example, they were very dry in Taiwan. They were like crackers. So it's totally surprising. You have to imagine the water out of there, and it becomes another product. And they don't eat all kind of jellyfish, but only certain species. And it is so that in the meantime, there are a few fisheries in the West, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico, that are exporting jellyfish now toward East Asia. And so jellyfish are fisheries are spreading. It seems also that jellyfish themselves are becoming more, the jellyfish outbreak are becoming more frequent. There is a little problem, which is possibly the newspapers reported less about the sea than earlier. And I have a student who is now collecting, a master student, who is collecting data, also newspapers article, from all over the world for the last 50 years to see if there has been an increase in the ratio of reports about jellyfish relative to reports about the sea in general. And we hope to find a definitive result. I suspect that the jellyfish have increased. And in some ecosystem, we know that for sure. For example, in West Africa, in Namibia, off Namibia, about 15 million tons of fish in the ecosystem have been replaced by 12 million tons of jellyfish. And once the jellyfish are there, they eat the eggs and larvae of fish. So the fish have a problem with establishing themselves. And that is a danger that our seas really face nowadays, the invasion by jellyfish.
And is this also linked to climate change and rising, the rising temperature of the seas?
Very often people say the jellyfish increase is due to temperature change. But you can have cold water jellyfish as well. So temperature alone is not a good explanation, a change in temperature. But what is a good explanation is the fishing of the fish that compete with jellyfish for a small zooplankton. And that is probably the reason. Also, jellyfish can tolerate much better than fish hypoxia, the decline in oxygen in the water. And to the extent that coastal habitat are often stressed by lack of oxygen, then the jellyfish have an advantage. And why the lack of oxygen? Often it's because the fertilizer that coming from land end up fertilizing the sea. You have algae explosion, and then they drop on the bottom of the sea and they rot and eat up all the oxygen. And so that is the reason why we have an increase in dead zones or in zones of low oxygen, and jellyfish enjoy this. And altogether, we have a situation where with a fish and a marine mammal declining, and some marine mammal at least, the jellyfish increasing, you have a reversal of what happened in the last 500 million years, and a return to ecosystem dominated by bacteria, microbial loops, and all kind of jellyfish-like animals, which is what we had in the Precambrian 580 years ago. A million years ago.
Can you tell us about the variety of issues surrounding carnivore fish farming?
Well, fish farming altogether appears as a solution to the situation of fisheries, but the main problem with aquaculture of carnivores, is that we basically use more fish to feed them than the farm producers. So you end up with this absurd situation that the more fish you produce in your farm, the less fish there is to eat for people. And this will not go into the heads of some people, but it is true. The lie that has been propagated to justify this is to say that the fish that are fed to the salmon, for example, could not be used by human, could not be consumed by human. These are unedible fish, and it's simply not true, because lots of people, in, for example, along the Mediterranean coast of France, Italian and Spaniards and Portuguese, everybody eats eat anchovies, for example, and sardine and so on. So small fish that are turned into fish meal are literally taken from the mouth of people. That, especially people in developing countries, and that therefore, I very much resent when aquaculture, when the proponent of aquaculture say that they generate fish. They don't. They consume fish to produce a product, and therefore this is only a business venture, I guess, like producing a racing car. This is not. A racing car will not solve the traffic problem in downtown Vancouver. It's a racing car.
Is there anything else that we can feed these fish other than other fish?
This has been tried again and again. But basically, if you omit fish meal and fish oil from the diet of carnivores, they don't taste good. They taste like tofu if you give them saw meal, and they get sick. They get sick, they don't grow well, and they taste bad. And so you have to give them some fish. And as soon as you do that, you end up with a negative fish production.
Now, you mentioned earlier that it's not necessarily up to an individual consumer to try and do their part to solve the fish crisis. But how effective are consumer awareness campaigns in rebuilding fish populations? Can they have any effect?
We live in countries and that are, for example, we live in democracies. So we can view ourselves as primarily as consumers, or we can view ourselves primarily as citizens. Now, as consumers, you try to steer the things that happen around you via your decision to consume something or not to consume something. I guess you have to do that, but that cannot be sufficient. First of all, it involves your stomach. It doesn't involve your mind. It doesn't involve your brain. And that can't be all. We are more than just consumers. And the approaching the once you have raised awareness and people buy the right thing, you would say, what else do they do? And if you don't propose that they do something else beyond the consumption, then you become, in a sense, part of the problem. This is, you don't want to be only a consumer. You want to be a citizen who has opinion about the way the world should be. And the sea should be. And that means get involved in an NGO, that is an environmental NGO that fights for against pollution, for example, by farms. Get involved in a cause that actually addresses the issue you are interested in. And don't expect that your your consuming behavior is going to affect anything, because it isn't, because usually these causes involve a small minority of people, like organic food and so on. On the other hand, if you can influence policy, they will be multiplied, government policy, they will be then multiplied, the decisions that are taken by the state apparatus, the laws and regulation. So policy work is always needed to frame the consumption that you decide to do.
Dr. Polly, what's next for you?
We have published a number of papers now showing how global warming will affect the distribution of fisheries catches, and we are going to improve on the model that we use by adding the oxygen and the acidification component of the future oceans. And I expect to find that the situation of fisheries will be quite bleak in 2-3 generations. And so my voice, our voice, will be added to those who insist that if we don't reduce quickly the emission of carbon dioxide, we are in for really deep trouble.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of
cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds fit, and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're...
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Welcome back to Prof Talk. Now, before I let you go, Dr. Polly, this year on Prof Talk, we have decided to end all of our interviews with something a little bit more fun, a little bit not really related to your research. It's a series of rapid-fire, nonsensical questions. They're either-or questions, and okay. You have to answer either one or the other, just for fun. So, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Mountain or ocean?
Ocean, obviously.
Pepsi or Coke?
Coke.
Crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Skiing or snowboarding?
I'm going to break my leg. skiing.
Okay. Salad or fries?
Salad. It has to be.
Okay. Vancouver or Toronto?
Oh, Vancouver, anytime.
Yes, good choice. Mac or PC?
I'm a PC person.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Phone or email?
Email.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla.
First years or graduate students?
Graduate students.
Pen or pencil?
Pencil.
Day or night?
Day.
Car or bike?
Car.
Rain or snow?
Rain.
Tim Hortons or Starbucks?
Starbucks.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
And here's a tough one for you to answer. Salmon or tuna?
Tuna.
Tuna? Why tuna?
Why salmon?
Good question. Dr. Polly, thank you so much for joining us again on Prof Talk. It's been great speaking with you.
Yep.
So, Dr. Polly, thank you for joining us again.
Okay, you've been listening to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Today on the show, we spoke with Dr. Daniel Polly from the UBC Fisheries Center. Hopefully some of what you heard on the show today will motivate you to think about sustainable seafood options and take steps towards protecting our natural underwater environments. I'd like to say a big thank you to Dr. Polly for his time, and also to Lex Stoymanoff, who produced today's show. A reminder to call into the station at 604-822-8648 if you can help us out with our Fund Drive campaign. And also check out our brand new Prof Talk blog. You can find that at ubcproftalk.com. www.brownstown.wordpress.com. You can also leave comments on our blog and link to the podcast of today's show. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you back here next Monday morning for another edition of Prof Talk. Once again, I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day. Thank you.